It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
For victims of domestic violence, we actually have an interesting category called loss of support. So, for example, if you're married to your abuser and he is removed from the home out of an incident or a protective order, we could pay you up to 3 months of his lost wages if that's what's needed for you to move forward.
Mary Vale Ware, director of the Virginia Criminal Injuries Compensation Fund, explains how victims of violent crimes can receive awards of up to $15,000. And during this week's question and answer session, you'll learn how the answer to creditor and debt collector harassment is quite literally in your own hands. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 42, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, 18 million jobless workers will see their unemployment compensation increase by $25 per week. While unemployment compensation usually is included as income when determining eligibility for Medicaid and Family Access to Medical Insurance Security, or FAMIS, the additional $25 per week will be excluded. This ensures that the modest increase in unemployment compensation doesn't put a family's Medicaid or FAMIS eligibility at risk. By contrast, the $25 per week increase is counted in determining eligibility for food stamps, now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. SNAP benefits phase down with additional income, so $100 per month more of income results in $30 per month less of benefits. In Medicaid and FAMIS, however, people either are eligible or not eligible for full benefits, which do not phase down as income rises. Excluding $25 per week in additional unemployment compensation income is intended to prevent people from becoming uninsured. In other news, according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, about 40% of families facing eviction due to foreclosure are renters who have little protection. If a landlord is foreclosed, tenants who have paid their rent on time may face eviction with little or no notice. The status of renters in foreclosure cases is a matter of complex and varying state laws. Only 14 states require court foreclosure. Only 17 states require any type of notice to tenants, and only New Jersey and the District of Columbia explicitly preserve tenants' rights in the lease after foreclosure. Virginia does not require court foreclosure, but does require notice to tenants and court process for eviction. However, the protections are few. Usually the tenant gets only a written 5-day notice to vacate, but this notice must go to both the former owner and the tenant. In addition, the court paper seeking eviction must be served or legally delivered to both the former owner and the tenant. A proposal in Congress to protect tenants by allowing them to stay in their homes for at least 90 days after a foreclosure awaits action. With this week's news you can use, This is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is warrant in debt. A warrant in debt is a civil claim for money filed in the General District Court. Although this court form is called a warrant in debt, it is not used in a criminal case. It is used only in a civil case. The court paper must be served on or legally delivered to the person sued, called the defendant. The paper tells the date, time, and place of the court hearing, or the time to set a trial date, the amount of money claimed, and briefly, the reason why it's claimed. The hearing is the defendant's chance to contest the claim for money or ask for a bill of particulars. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and warrant in debt is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for the weekly question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Jim, and I'm from Powhatan.
Welcome to the show, Jim. What question do we have this week?
Yes, being unemployed and as the economy is going right now, being behind on a lot of credit card bills, I have a large local credit card company that advises me that they're allowed to call 15 times a day to attempt to collect a debt. Is this legal?
I have one follow-up question before I answer. Is it the credit card company itself that's calling, or is it a debt collector or debt collection agency calling for the credit card company?
No, it is the credit card company.
Okay, well, the answer obviously depended on your answer to that question. There are no restrictions on what the credit card company or any creditor collecting its own debt can do. They're not covered by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act that I'll talk about in a moment. So they are pretty much unregulated, and they can indeed call you any number of times a day. But it's your phone. It's not their phone. You pay the phone bill. They don't pay the phone bill. And you decide who gets to talk on your phone. They don't get to decide who talks on your phone. So the answer is very simple, and it's as close as the hand in which you're holding the receiver. When you're called by a creditor, or for that matter, any debt collector or debt collection agency, the simplest thing to do is to remove the receiver from your ear and hang up. And do that as often as necessary. And you may need to do that 5, 10, 15 times in a row. Eventually, they will get the idea that this is unproductive for them, and they'll go on to somebody else. Now, if it really gets ridiculous beyond that point, you certainly can pick up your phone book, turn to the table of contents or the index, and look up how to report nuisance or annoying or harassing phone calls to your phone company. But typically, if you just hang up repeatedly, then they will eventually stop and they will go do their fishing in a somewhat better place. Now, if the debt collector is collecting a third-party debt, then they are covered by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and you have more effective legal remedies. What you can do is get the name, address, and phone number, particularly the name and address, of the debt collection agency, and you can write them a letter. Short, simple, business-like letter, their name and address, your name and return address, sign it, date it, and say, stop contacting me. Then under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, they are required to stop contacting you. They can only make one further contact, and that would simply be a letter to you indicating what their next action is going to be. And that's it. So I always advise people, if they're contacted by a debt collector, to invoke their legal rights under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Unfortunately, that only is effective as to that debt collector, and the next debt collector is not subject to the same restriction, but you can write a letter back to them, and eventually the original creditor might get the idea that you really are judgment-proof, collections-proof, and again, they'll go, you know, fishing in better waters. Is all that helpful to you?
Yes, it is. That was under the impression it was harassment, but now you have told me what the concept is and what their legal views are, and now I know what to do.
Well, thank you very much. It's very typical of credit card companies and other collectors that have no better way to get money from you to harass you. And you can only be harassed if you will allow yourself to be harassed. Thanks for being on the show.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Criminal Injuries Compensation Fund, and we're interviewing the director, Mary Vale Ware. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, the first question I have for our listeners is, exactly what is the Criminal Injuries Compensation Fund?
The Criminal Injuries Compensation Fund is a fund created by the Virginia General Assembly back in 1977, and our purpose is to assist victims of violent crime with their out-of-pocket expenses. Every state in the nation has a compensation fund like the one here in Virginia.
And where does the money for the compensation fund come from?
The compensation fund is not funded by tax dollars. We're actually funded by fines and fees paid by offenders through the court system. So when someone's found guilty of a crime and they pay their court fee, we get a little portion of that money and in turn take that back to victims. We also get federal money that comes from fines and fees paid at the federal level. So when you hear about a major company paying for a fine at the federal level, that money comes back to your state to pay victims of violent crime.
Okay, and then in just rough dollar figures, roughly how large is the fund per year in terms of money it collects or money that it pays out?
We pay out about $3.6 million a year to victims across the Commonwealth, and we get in roughly that, about $3.7 million from fines and fees. We also do our own collections. If an offender is found guilty for a crime for which we've paid, we will go after that person for the money owed to the fund as well. So we get about $700,000 a year from that source.
And roughly how many claims a year get paid out?
We get in well over 2,000 claims a year, and we pay out probably 1,200 initial claims a year, but we're also always paying on claims from prior years as well, as people have injuries that have to continue to get treatment.
Well, tell me, who can file a claim under the Criminal Injury Compensation Fund?
Anyone in the Commonwealth of Virginia who has been the victim of a violent crime can file a claim with the fund. There are some caveats on the money. When a public agency gives away money, there's always strings. So the victim needs to be an innocent victim. In other words, they should not have been a part of the incident that injured them. They need to be cooperative with police and prosecution efforts. They need to use their collateral resources first. In other words, if they have insurance or some other source to pay for their bills, then they would have to use those first in order to get paid the remainder by the fund.
Now, you said that the victim has to be a victim of a violent crime. Yes. What do you mean by a violent crime?
A crime in which they may have been injured. So, for example, if you were the victim of a crime such as identity theft, that person would not be eligible for the fund.
So not property crimes, but basically personal injury crimes.
Yes.
What about mental trauma? I mean, you weren't physically injured, but whatever happened to you caused, you know, severe emotional distress, and you can document that. I mean, you've got medical evidence showing that.
There is a list of felonies for which we will pay if a person was not physically injured. For example, if someone was held up during a robbery and someone held a gun to their head and took their money and then ran away, that's a felony. So we could pay for that crime. And it's always good to check. If you're not sure, give us a call or send us an email and ask if you might qualify for the fund.
Okay, and we'll get to contact information at the end of the interview, but let's continue with what the crime has to be or how the crime has to be reported. Are there rules about when the crime has to be reported and to whom?
Yes, the crime has to be reported to law enforcement, that's your local police, within 120 hours of the crime occurring. We can make exceptions to that 120-hour rule, which is 5 days. For example, if the victim is in a coma and unable to call police or they had to flee and they delay a little bit, that's fine. But they do need to report it to law enforcement, and they do need to be cooperative with investigation and prosecution efforts.
When does the claim have to be filed with the Criminal Injury Compensation Fund?
It needs to be filed within a year of the date of the crime itself. That is actually in order for us to pay your claim faster. When victims wait to try and file claims, it's very difficult for us to get things like the police report and hospital records that we need in order to pay the claim. Again, there is a good cause provision. For example, if a victim, again, fled and wasn't available to fill out the claim, or if a victim was very ill and unable to fill out a claim or incapacitated, then we may extend that deadline if there's very good cause.
And would a victim who can file a claim under the Criminal Injury Compensation Fund, would that include someone who's a victim of domestic violence?
Yes.
Okay, so that's one of the things that people seeking protective orders ought to be thinking about right at the time that they're seeking the protective order. In other words, typically they have to file for the protective order within 3 to 5 days in order for it to be taken seriously. They ought to report it to law enforcement within the same period and then file with your agency fairly soon after that.
They should. If they're only filing a protective order, though, that does not give them entree into the fund. We need that additional assault that goes with that protective order.
So they should contact their local magistrate or perhaps their local Commonwealth attorney and file assault or assault and battery charges.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so what would the victim get at the end result? What are they eligible to receive?
We pay a number of different payment categories here at the fund. We pay for out-of-pocket medical expenses that are directly related to the crime. We will pay for mental health expenses. If someone is a survivor of a homicide victim, we could pay for their counseling expenses. We pay funeral or burial expenses. Lost wages, again, directly due to the crime itself. You have to be working at the time of the crime to get those. For victims of domestic violence, we actually have an interesting category called loss of support. So, for example, if you're married to your abuser and he is removed from the home out of an incident or a protective order, we could pay you up to 3 months of his lost wages if that's what's needed for you to move forward. We pay for moving expenses up to $1,000. We pay for crime scene cleanup, mileage to and from medical appointments, and prescriptions.
Now, is there any maximum on the total award that can be paid to a victim if you add up all those various categories of compensation?
Yes. The total award amount is $25,000, and we also have some subcaps on some expenses. For example, moving expenses is capped at $1,000. Domestic violence loss of support is capped at $7,200. So there are a few subcaps within that $25,000, but the maximum award for any claim is $25,000.
Now, you mentioned that the Criminal Injury Compensation Fund will not pay for a property loss or a property crime. Are there other types of losses that just are not covered by the fund?
There are a few exclusions to the fund. For example, we don't pay for hit-and-run auto accidents. That's specifically excluded. We normally don't pay for people's food. For example, if you had to go to a hotel and you bought lunch, we wouldn't pay for that. There are a number of things we don't pay for. We also have some exceptions to the property loss rule. We will pay for things that we consider prosthetic, like eyeglasses. We will pay for things like locks and windows if that's needed. So those are exceptions to the property loss rule. Also, we don't pay for property loss, attorney's fees, pain and suffering.
Okay, so how long does this process take from the time that the victim files a claim with your agency until they get that check in the mail?
Our average days to decision right now is at 44 days, but that varies depending on the claim, and it depends on how quickly we get the paperwork that we need from all of the parties.
Okay, fair enough. That's quite fast for any agency, especially when dealing with traumatic events like this. What happens if the victim of the crime is a minor or is mentally incompetent? Is there a procedure for someone to file on that person's behalf?
Yes, their parent or legal guardian should file on their behalf.
Now, are there special rules that deal with people who have insurance coverage? Do they have extra duties they have to do in order to file a claim?
Yes, if you are injured and you have insurance coverage, that insurance should pay your medical bills first. The fund will then come in and pay your copays. And if you, similarly with life insurance, if you have life insurance, that would need to cover a funeral. And if there's anything left over after that insurance is paid, the fund may come in and assist with that.
All right. Now, what if you were treated at a hospital, but you just weren't covered by insurance? What does the victim have to do there?
If you're treated at a hospital and you're not covered, you should work with the hospital to apply for any charity care or state and local hospitalization that might be available to you. The reason that we ask folks to do that is that if you have a serious injury, we want to reserve as much money from the fund as we can for your treatment that might come after your initial injury. So if you can get those bills written off, that will be helpful to you in the long run. So we do ask folks to try and see what the hospital might offer them in ways of discount or charity care before the fund will pay.
And I understand that there are some special protections that are available to victims who have filed claims that basically protects them from collection efforts from healthcare providers. Could you tell us about those?
Yes. Once somebody files a claim with the fund, any collection efforts that a healthcare provider might be undertaking must be ceased immediately. And that's fairly unique. Virginia was one of the first states in the nation to enact that rule.
That's a good rule to have around. So it sounds like someone who is a victim of violent crime needs to report it promptly, 5 days, and then file a claim with your agency as soon as possible.
Yes.
How do they go about doing that? What's the contact information?
Our contact information, you can call our office at 1-800-552-4007, and our staff can assist you, or you can check us out on the web at www.cicf.state.va.us. Our application form is also there on our website. In addition, if a victim is in touch with someone from a victim witness office, those offices also can provide our applications and assistance in filling out those applications for victims.
And I believe those victim witness offices are available in pretty much every city and county in the Commonwealth. Is that correct?
Yes. Victim witness assistance personnel are usually located in a Commonwealth attorney's office or in your local police department.
Thank you very much. That is extremely helpful information. We have been speaking with Mary Vale Ware, who is the director of the Criminal Injuries Compensation Fund. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about Medicare. The first tip is that Medicare is a national health insurance program run by the Social Security Administration. The second tip is that Medicare has three parts. Part A covers part of the cost of hospitalization, extended care facilities such as nursing homes, and home health services. Part B covers part of the medical expenses such as doctor's fees, outpatient treatment, and laboratory work. Part D covers part of the cost of prescription drugs. The third tip is that Medicare is like an insurance program and should not be confused with Medicaid, which is like a welfare program. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Although legally in this country, H-2A migrant farm workers face major cultural, geographic, and language barriers in accessing their legal rights. Join us next week when Christiane Quiroz, director of the Virginia Farm Workers Legal Assistance Project, describes how her staff of three provides legal assistance to more than 2,500 farm workers in Virginia every year. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wainwright. Oh.